Bill read a statement from Tesla, which apparently verified the famous 1885 Edison story that Edison had laughed off the promised debt to Tesla of $50,000 for redesigning machinery. In 1939, just as World War II was about to start, George Sylvester Viereck set off on a surreptitious journey to the fatherland. There, amid the pageantry of swastikas and the Gestapo, he met yet again with Adolf Hitler and received a communique signed by the Führer in his own hand. The date was February the 26th, 1939. Upon his return, Viereck continued his practice of preaching the Nazi line in a variety of publications, writing some articles under an assumed name, interpreting FDR as having a messianic complex, and Hitler as a dynamic genius and a poet of passion, first in war, first in peace, first in the hearts of his countrymen. Viereck was arrested and indicted on 2 counts of seditious conspiracy. It was quickly established that he was on the German payroll, supposedly as a journalist, but obviously as a paid propagandist. Conceited and self-deluded, the bewildered and obtuse philosopher was sent to jail, where he wrote poetry for the next few years. Just as references to Tesla were deleted from engineering texts, Viereck's name was dropped from many anthologies and who's who. Thus, both individuals disappeared from history books, but for totally different reasons. As World War II began, Tesla was becoming more feeble, lapsing in and out of states of coherence. During one of his more lucid moments, he wrote, with the help of his nephew, Sava Kosanovich, the foreword to Vice President Henry Wallace's address on the future of the common man for the Serbo-Croatian edition. The essay not only portrays a prophet who envisions a better world in the future, it also portrays the conflict and humiliation he himself suffered in his dealings with the greedy industrialists who capitalized on his inventions with little regard for his well-being, let alone the welfare of mankind as a whole. Out of this war, the greatest since the beginning of history, a new world must be born that would justify the sacrifices offered by humanity, where there will be no humiliation of the poor by the violence of the rich, where the products of intellect, science, and art will serve society for the betterment and beautification of life, and not the individuals for achieving wealth. This new world shall be a world of free men and free nations, equal in dignity and respect. The old man gazed out the window as his nimble fingers unconsciously preened the ruffled feathers of his beloved white pigeon with the brown-tipped wings. Although it was January, a lightning storm rumbled in the distance.
"I've done better than that,"
the wizard mumbled, as the sun peeked through the clouds to reveal the iridescent purples, violets, greens, and reds of the neck feathers of another of the more hardy birds that came to visit. Tesla thought back affectionately to his days as a boy on the farm, rolling down the hill carefree with Mashek, his pet cat. And then his mind swirled with thoughts of violent arguments with Morgan, his unfinished 15-story transmission tower, and his friend Mark Twain, who was now in financial trouble. Requesting funds from Kosanovich, Tesla handed the money to a messenger to deliver to Twain, giving as the address his old laboratory on South Fifth Avenue, a street that no longer existed. Unable to locate the deceased writer, the boy returned to Tesla, but his explanation was ignored. The old man told the boy to keep the money if he could not deliver it. Having neglected to pay the rent on his belongings held at Manhattan Storage, the wizard had managed somehow to mail out a check for $500 to a Serbian church fundraising event held in Gary, Indiana. G.J. Weilich, manager of Manhattan Storage, threatened to put the lot up for auction. The outstanding bill was $297. Perhaps too disillusioned to care, Tesla ignored the last warning, and Weilich made good on his promise, placing an announcement in the local papers. Noticing the advertisement, Jack O'Neill rushed to contact Tesla's nephew, Sava Kosanovich, who was now the Yugoslavian ambassador stationed in New York. Kosanovich covered the debt and continued to make the carrying charge, $15 per month, saving this invaluable legacy from tragic dismantlement.
One night, Tesla wrote, as I was lying in bed in the dark, solving problems as usual, my beloved pigeon flew through the open window and stood on my desk. As I looked at her, I knew she wanted to tell me she was dying. And then, as I got her message, there came a light from her eyes, powerful beams of light. When that pigeon died, something went out of my life. I knew that my life's work was finished.
Lingering at the abyss throughout the beginning years of World War II, Tesla continued to lead his dual life, meeting with friends and dignitaries whenever possible, and lending out his secret papers to mysterious men. A few months later, he was dead. The date was January the 7th, 1943. He was 86 years old. 2,000 are present at Tesla's funeral. Great in science attend.
The President and I are deeply sorry to hear of the death of Mr. Nikola Tesla. We are grateful for his contribution to science and industry and to this country.
Eleanor Roosevelt. The funeral service was held in Serbian in the Cathedral of St. John the Divine. With the coffin open, the sermon for the dead was conducted by the Venerable Reverend Dušan Šukletović, rector of the Serb Orthodox Church of St. Sava. Over the radio, New York Mayor Fiorello LaGuardia read a moving eulogy written by Croatian author Luis Adamic as a long line of mourners filed past. The list of honorary pallbearers included Dr. Ernest Alexanderson of GE, who gained his wealth and fame from inventing a powerful high-frequency transmitter. Dr. Harvey Rentschler, director of the research laboratories of Westinghouse. Edwin Armstrong, father of FM radio. Consul General D.M. Stanojevic of Yugoslavia. William Barton, curator of the Hayden Planetarium, where Tesla often went to meditate. And Gano Dunn, president of J.G. White Engineering, and Tesla's assistant a half-century before, during his paradigm-shifting experiments delivered just a few blocks away at Columbia University.
We cannot know, but it may be that a long time from now, when patterns are changed, the critics will take a view of history, Hugo Gernsback wrote propitiously in his magazine. They will bracket Tesla with Da Vinci or with our own Mr. Franklin. One thing is sure, Gernsback concluded. The world as we run it today did not appreciate his peculiar greatness.
Colonel David Sarnoff, president of RCA, also took the soapbox on Tesla's behalf.
Nikola Tesla's achievements in electrical science are monuments that symbolize America as a land of freedom and opportunity. His novel ideas of getting the ether in vibration put him on the frontier of wireless. Tesla's mind was a human dynamo that whirled to benefit mankind.
Edwin Armstrong, who was about to sue Sarnoff and RCA for infringing his FM patents, helped place Tesla in the proper historical perspective when he said,
who today can read a copy of the inventions, researches, and writings of Nikola Tesla, published before the turn of the century, without being fascinated by the beauty of the experiments described and struck with admiration for Tesla's extraordinary insight into the nature of the phenomena with which he was dealing? Who now can realize the difficulties he must have had to overcome in those early days? But one can imagine the inspirational effect of the book 40 years ago on a boy about to decide to study the electrical art. Its effect was both profound and decisive.
On September the 25th, 1943, just 9 months after Tesla's death, the Bethlehem Fairfield shipyards near Baltimore launched the USS Nikola Tesla, a 10,000-ton Liberty ship. Sponsors at the ceremony included a number of Croats, such as Luis Adamic and violinist Slatko Belakovic, and also Serbs such as Tesla's nephews, Sava Kozanovic and Nicholas Tebajevic. The New York Sun editorialized,
Mr. Tesla was 86 years old when he died. He died alone. He was an eccentric, whatever that means, a nonconformist possibly. At any rate,
He would leave his experiments and go for a time to feed the silly and inconsequential pigeons in Herald Square. He delighted in talking nonsense. Or was it? Granting that he was a difficult man to deal with, and that sometimes his predictions would affront the ordinary human's intelligence, here still was an extraordinary man of genius. He must have been. He was seeing a glimpse into that confused and mysterious frontier which divides the known and the unknown. But today we do know that Tesla, the ostensibly foolish old gentleman, at times was trying with superb intelligence to find the answers. His guesses were right so often that he would be frightening. Probably we shall appreciate him better a few million years from now.
47. The FBI and the Tesla Papers, 1943 to 1956. War Department, Military Intelligence Service. 22nd of January, 1946. Alien Property Custodian. Dear Sir, this office is in receipt of a communication from Headquarters, Air Technical Service Command, Wright Field, requesting that we ascertain the whereabouts of the files of the late scientist Dr. Nikola Tesla, which may contain data of great value to the above headquarters. In view of the extreme importance of those files, we would like to request also that we be advised of any attempt by any other agency to obtain them. Sincerely yours, Colonel Ralph E. Doty, Chief Washington Branch.
After Tesla's death, the FBI, the Office of Alien Property, OAP, and factions of the War Department conspired to impound and protect the Tesla secret weaponry papers. The United States was in the midst of a world war, and Tesla's ties to arms merchants, communists through his Yugoslavian nephew, and a notorious German propagandist all helped prompt the covert agencies to safeguard this material until it was properly analyzed. A half century later, they have yet to release it. Raised to the level of a national hero within the Slavic countries, Tesla was considered practically of royal stock. Thus his nephew, Sava Kozanovich, rose to become a representative of the newly forming Yugoslavia Republic at the Eastern European Planning Board, which met in Czechoslovakia. Kozanovich, like Tesla, wanted a unified country, but their orientations were different. In 1941, the Nazis continued their policy of intimidation and deception by trying to force a treaty with King Peter of Yugoslavia. Backed by the people, Peter refused to agree to an alliance, and therefore suffered a fatal blow when Germany masterminded a brutal invasion involving troops from Bulgaria, Italy, and Hungary, and also 300 Luftwaffe bombers. Professor Michael Markovich of Long Island University, a Serb living in Croatia during World War II, has said that 90,000 Serbs were killed by the Croats. And when I inquired why, he said, because the Croats were fascists. That is, because they had aligned themselves with the Nazis. As a youth in midst of the war, Markovich had watched the bodies float down the river. When asked why he survived, his reply was sheer luck. Concerning the Tesla mythology, Markovich said that ever since he was a child, he was aware that Tesla was considered a great national hero. Years later, as Hitler's invasion became imminent, Markovich and his countrymen had expected Tesla himself to return to Belgrade and shield it from the Nazis by harnessing his impenetrable death shield. Unfortunately, Tesla never came. Kozanovich was not as romantic a figure, and although a Serb, he abandoned the exiled king in order to back the rising Croat leader Joseph Tito, Josip Broz, and his communist doctrine. Tito was a solid choice. Although he was an ally of the Soviets, he was able to maintain autonomy. He also sought to unify the warring factions. His marriage to a Serbian woman was a powerful symbol in advancing this goal. Since the Soviet Union was an ally, Kozanovich, as a Yugoslavian ambassador, was able to travel freely to America to discuss various diplomatic tactics with the new leadership. Thus, during the course of World War II, he was able to attend to his ailing uncle in New York and also try to finalize plans to set up a museum in Belgrade in order to honor the great inventor. In 1942, Tesla became more seriously ill and suffered from palpitations and fainting spells. Although Tesla's true commitment was to the young exiled King Peter, Tesla's nephew was able to coax the inventor into sending a message to Tito, which preached unification between Serbs and Croats. Kosanović also admitted shielding Tesla from factions of the Serbian royalty at the same time. However, when Peter arrived in New York City, he actively helped arrange a meeting between Tesla and the king. Having unsuccessfully talked with Churchill in England and Roosevelt in Washington, both of whom were reluctantly backing Tito, King Peter was at least consoled by Eleanor Roosevelt, who attended a large party in his honor at the Colony Club in New York. Organized by the American Friends of Yugoslavia, the king's mother, Queen Marie, and also Anne Morgan, Pierpont's daughter, attended, but Tesla was too ill to come. Therefore, King Peter, with Kosanović, took a cab to the Hotel New Yorker to confer with the virtual patriarch of his country. Shocked by Tesla's cadaverous condition and upset by the terrible chain of events in his country, Peter told the inventor that he had hoped that he could have returned to Yugoslavia to free it from the Nazis. In his diaries, Peter also revealed that he and Tesla wept together for all the sorrows that had torn apart their homeland. A few months later, Tesla was dead. A maid discovered his body on January the 8th, 1943. While Hugo Gernsback rushed to make a death mask, Kenneth Sweezy, Sava Kosanović, and George Clark, director of a museum and laboratory at RCA, entered the apartment. With the locksmith and the hotel management present, they removed various documents from the inventor's safe. Although the FBI alleged that valuable papers, electrical formulas, designs, etc. were taken, the hotel management confirmed that Kosanović removed only three pictures, and Sweezy took the 1931 testimonial autograph book created for the commemoration of Tesla's 75th birthday. These events were monitored by the ubiquitous surveillance mastermind J. Edgar Hoover, hardline anti-communist and protector of American interests. Hoover wrote in a memorandum under the heading Espionage that he feared that Kosanović, as heir to the Tesla estate, might make certain material available to the enemy. Kosanović had been identified as a member of the Eastern European Planning Board, but because of the complicated condition of the Balkan states, there was essentially no way for Hoover to ascertain exactly where Kosanović's alliances rested. He could have been affiliated with King Peter, the communist Tito, fascist factions associated with Mussolini, Hitler, the Soviet Union, or none of the above. Consistent with his suspicious nature, Hoover also questioned Tesla's sympathies, even though the inventor was friends with Vice President Henry Wallace and Franklin Roosevelt through letters to his wife Eleanor. One of the main reasons for Hoover's concerns was Tesla's address before the Friends of Soviet Russia, which he gave at the Grange Hall in Springfield, Massachusetts, in 1922. On January 8th, Abraham N. Sparnell, the 42-year-old president of the International Latex Corporation of Dover, Delaware, now Playtex, who was residing in New York City, had called FBI agent Frederick Cornells to discuss Tesla's death ray experiments. As the inventor had just died, Sparnell feared that Kosanović would obtain the pertinent papers and pass them to the Soviets. Sparnell had already begun to make a name for himself in media and military circles by having invented floating pontoon stretchers for soldiers wounded in amphibious landings, and by turning back the million-dollar profits to the government for the war effort. Born in Odessa in 1901, Sparnell would later become a vociferous anti-communist who spent upward of $8 million throughout the 1940s and 1950s buying space in the United States press to reprint articles that would contribute to an understanding of world problems. Having fled to France in 1905 to escape the anti-Semitic pogroms of Russia with his family, as a child Sparnell, at the age of 7, came to the United States in 1908. A graduate of the University of Rochester, Sparnell had invented electrical appliances and pneumatic products in the early 1920s, before starting the International Latex Corporation in 1929. Realizing the potential importance of the Tesla invention in the democratic fight for world supremacy, Sparnell had contacted Dr. D. Lozardo, advisor to Vice President Wallace, and a Mr. Bopkin of the Department of Justice. Bobkin agreed to contact J. Edgar Hoover regarding the affair, and Lozado conferred with Wallace and perhaps even FDR, calling Sparnell back shortly after their conversation to convey that the government was vitally interested in Tesla's papers. Sparnell had also contacted one Bloise Fitzgerald, whom the FBI had pegged as an electrical engineer who was a protege of Tesla's, who had also called Cornell's. Having met Fitzgerald at an engineering meeting a few years earlier, Sparnell became highly interested in the Tesla weapon, possibly hoping to become involved in a profitable business developing the death beam device for the U.S. military. Fitzgerald, still in his 20s, had been in postal communication with Tesla since the late 1930s. He had called the inventor on his birthday in 1938 to congratulate him and continued this practice for the next 4 years. In 1939, Fitzgerald tried to meet Tesla, but it appears that he didn't do so at that time. Just 2 weeks prior to Tesla's death, Fitzgerald proposed another meeting. It may have taken place. He was working at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology with Professors Keenan, Woodruff, and Kay in the solution of certain problems regarding the dissipation of energy from rapid-fire weapons, and desired to discuss his radiation problem with the elderly inventor. It is plausible that at this delicate time, Fitzgerald was able to borrow the various papers in which he was interested. Coincidentally, Tesla had declared that efforts had been made to steal the invention. My room had been entered and my papers examined, but the spies left empty-handed. Fitzgerald, who also worked for the Ordnance Department of the U.S. Army, later told Cornell's that he knows that the complete plans, specifications, and explanations of the basic theories of these things are someplace in the personal effects of Tesla, and that there is a working model of the death ray, which costs more than $10,000 to build, in a safety deposit box of Tesla's at the Governor Clinton Hotel. To corroborate this story, another acquaintance of Tesla's, Charles Hausler, a hired hand who took care of the inventor's pigeons, later said that Tesla had a large box or container in his room near the pigeon cages. He told me to be very careful not to disturb the box, as it contained something that could destroy an airplane in the sky, and he had hopes for presenting it to the world. Hausler also added that the device was later stored in the basement of a hotel. Fitzgerald reported that Tesla had claimed that he had 80 trunks in different locations in the city containing inventions, manuscripts, and plans of his various work. The young engineer reiterated the need for the government to obtain the Tesla papers for use in war. He was also worried about the loyalty and patriotism to the Allied nations of Sava Kozanovich and another nephew, Nicholas Terbayevich. During these same days, Cornell's overseer, D.E. Foxworth, an assistant director of the FBI, assured those concerned that this matter would be properly handled, that Tesla's nephew, who is his heir, would not be able to send the papers to the Axis powers. On the 11th, yet another FBI agent, T.J. Donegan, brought up the possibility that the New York District Attorney could have Kozanovich and Sweezy picked up discreetly on a burglary charge. However, this was not done. 3 days later, Donegan notified Hoover that the situation was being handled as an enemy custodian matter, and therefore we should take no further action. Office of Alien Property. What happened appears to be this. The FBI attempted to remove themselves from the responsibility in the Tesla case, thereby allowing the OAP to take charge. Nevertheless, because of the FBI's initial involvement, numerous people contacted them through the years in attempts to gain access to the Tesla estate. The OAP questioned the legality of their own jurisdiction, since Tesla was a naturalized citizen. However, as Kozanovich was probably legally entitled to his uncle's estate, the OAP had justification in considering the material alien property. According to Irvin Juro, who was the attorney assigned to the Tesla case at the time of his death, the activities of the OAP were not only not illegal, it was the only government agency with statutory power to seize enemy assets without court order. Because of this unique jurisdiction, it was the OAP and only the OAP that maintained legal control over the papers until they were released 10 years later. Naturally, both real and imagined concerns involving the war situation were the key factors influencing what, to the uninformed, appeared to be an illegal action. The Germans still controlled a large part of Europe, and the outcome of the war was by no means determined in January 1943. Rumors that the enemy was also developing an ultimate weapon were also well-founded. Walter Gorsuch, alien property custodian, thereupon ordered all of Tesla's belongings, including the safe from his apartment and other holdings in the basement of the New Yorker, shipped to where Tesla's other possessions were, Manhattan storage. Gorsuch, however, was out of the office the day Tesla's body was discovered, and it was the young attorney Irving Juro who handled the case.
"At about noon on Saturday, January 9th, Juro recalled 50 years later, "I was ordered by telephone from the Washington office not to close up shop, but to wait for further instructions. I was informed that a Nikola Tesla had just died, that he was reputed to have invented and in the possession of a death ray, a significant military device capable of destroying incoming warplanes, presumably Japanese, on the West Coast, by projecting a beam into the skies and creating a field of energy which would cause the planes to disintegrate. Moreover, it was suspected that German enemy agents were in hot pursuit to locate the device or the plans for its production. With orders to impound all of Tesla's belongings, Juro was also instructed to visit other hotels where Tesla had resided and to take similar action. Juro was accompanied by 4 individuals from the Office of Naval Intelligence, Army Intelligence, and the FBI. Arriving at the Hotel New Yorker, "We learned that Tesla had been found dead by the service maid. We were told that he was laid out in his bed with only a pair of stockings on."
The officials were also told that Kozanovich had been in the room and had removed 3 photographs. The military officers were concerned about the death ray model, but I was the only one who had authority. Taking a taxi, Juro and the others visited each of the hotels, which included the St. Regis, the Waldorf Astoria, and the Governor Clinton, and they also visited Manhattan storage. Tesla's possessions were impounded there, and the safe deposit box at the Governor Clinton was also impounded. With Walter Gorsuch, Juro went to visit Ambassador Kozanovich at his hotel on Central Park South, where they apparently also met Nikola Terbayevich, Tesla's other nephew, and an elderly lady who did not speak English. Gorsuch and Juro saw the photos on a table and left.
"I was told later," Juro recalled, "probably through the staff of the OAP, that Tesla's trunks contained mostly newspapers and birdseed, and that the safe deposit box contained a model of some type of device, whether the death ray or not is not clear."
It was also rumored that the Soviet Union had offered Tesla $50 million to come to the USSR and work on his death ray, but he refused. As Juro had never heard of Tesla before January the 8th, 1943, he saw the inventor as a deadbeat because he didn't pay his hotel bills.
"He may have been disturbed because he spent so much time feeding pigeons," Juro said.
But the story was too strange and too incomplete for him, so he called the Westinghouse people to try to verify who Tesla was.
"They were ecstatic," Juro recalled. "They said that without Tesla, there would have been no Westinghouse."
The Manhattan storage inventory did not mention the birdseed, which had played so prominently in Juro's memory. Possessions listed included 12 locked metal boxes, 1 steel cabinet, 35 metal cans, 5 barrels, and 8 trunks. Gorsuch also ordered the large hotel box at the Hotel Governor Clinton, held for over 10 years as security for unpaid bills, sealed. Jack O'Neill's papers were also confiscated, although they were probably returned to him, for he was able to publish his extensive biography a year later. Although Kozanovich assured O'Neill that there was no reason to worry and that the OAP conveyed full rights to the Tesla papers to him, in fact, Kozanovich was highly concerned. He hired Philip Wittenberg from Wittenberg, Carrington, and Farnsworth to protect his interest. Although the lawyer pleaded the case, the government countered with advice from the War Policies Unit of the Department of Justice. They ruled that Kozanovich could not touch the estate. This edict was maintained throughout the 1940s. Tesla's secret weaponry papers were scrutinized by various divisions of the military, although the nephew was given the combination to the safe